Attention, mill spouses, families, and service members. It's now time for another empowering episode of Army Wife Talk Radio, the leading and longest-running podcast of its kind. AWTR is here to engage, educate, and encourage you by sharing dynamic interviews, social media connections, news, and empowering military life information. Here are your AWTR hosts, your Army Wife Network command team.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to another empowering, exciting, and dare I say, explosive episode of Army Wife Talk Radio, the leading and longest running podcast of its kind. This is episode number 913, and I'm your host, Sarah Robichaud, Army Wife Network's communications liaison. And I'm hosting today with Caitlin Hevelon, AWN's recon representative. Listeners, as always, we have another great show lined up for you today. So grab those headphones and get ready for your weekly lineup of military life empowerment. On today's show, we will listen in to an interview conducted by our podcast production assistant, Annie Pierce, as she chats with our guest, Mike Hauk, from World War II Armor.
Thank you, Sarah. Hello, everyone. We have some great information in store for you in this episode. After Annie's conversation with Mike Hauk, we will be sharing some of our weekly resources to help you excel in your mill spouse life.
Army Wife Network is completely powered by volunteers and the generosity of our sponsors. It's an honor to introduce today's show sponsor, First Command Financial Services. First Command offers complimentary financial plans for active duty military E5 and above. Visit firstcommand.com to learn more and to find a financial coach near you. Their willingness to partner with us in our mission to empower military families is so very much appreciated. Thank you. Now, Caitlin, before we hear from Annie and Mike, let's pause for just a minute to catch up. How are things going in your mill spouse life?
It's a little chaotic at the moment, but hey, we all embrace it. My husband is in the process of going through his first real reenlistment and of the negotiation that comes with that. He's only ever extended his contract before, so even though we've been in this game for almost 7 years, this is the first time he's actually doing the real reenlistment thing. So that's fun.
Oh gosh, is that a long process?
Yes and no. We're trying to get more of a specific duty station rather than just whatever they want to offer.
Oh, okay.
So it is a little bit of a negotiation back and forth and going through HRC and all of the things and waiting 5 to 7 business days for a response.
That sounds like, a lot of fun, typical Army fun, right?
Yes, totally typical, but nerve-wracking.
Yeah, always.
What's going on with you, Sarah?
My life is also a bit chaotic. We are gearing up for a move. This month, my husband is just about to come home from a 9-week TDY in Alabama, and our packers will come 3 days after he gets home. So we've just been doing a lot of stuff over the phone, selling our house and, scheduling our whole move while he's been away. So it's just, it's been an interesting summer. I'm ready to move and get my kids back in school and just kind of settle for a few months.
Absolutely. I've definitely done the move with spouse TDY as well. So I get you.
Yeah.
It's a whole nother beast when you're trying to understand all of the lingo and the paperwork by yourself without the soldier there to translate.
Yeah, that's funny. You almost do need a translator with all of the military jargon and the acronyms that they toss at you.
Yes. I'm like, I like to read my research and I learn a lot of the acronyms, but when it comes to PCS stuff, I'm looking at them like I'm still lost.
It is. It's like reading a completely different language sometimes. It's awful.
Yes. I absolutely love catching up with you, Sarah. Now let's turn our attention to this week's main interview with Mike Hauk from World War II Armor.
Welcome back, listeners. I'm Annie Pierce, your podcast production assistant, and I can't wait to share with you today's empowering episode. While my husband was stationed overseas, we had the opportunity to visit Normandy. The vastness of open space and the cliffs that soldiers had to traverse just to get to cover takes your breath away. And today we are chatting with someone who is giving us a taste of what it meant to be a tank crew member during World War II. Demonstrating what those soldiers endured and accomplished. Our guest, Mike Hauk is the full-time chief of staff for World War II Armor. World War II Armor is a self-propelled living museum that demonstrates fully operational World War II tanks, tank destroyers, and artillery at public events as a way to honor the men who fought in them. Mike Hauk is a retired U.S. Army Master Sergeant. He began his 23 years with four as an Abrams tanker at Fort Riley, Kansas, obtaining the rank of sergeant. After his initial enlistment, Mike reclassed into Army Public Affairs as a video journalist, which after 19 years culminated in the position as spokesman for the National Guard Bureau. In 2016, prior to retirement, Mike began a civilian tanking hobby as volunteer crew on a replica Tiger tank that had been used in the movie Saving Private Ryan. And soon after, he began volunteering with Rabbi Rob Thomas's World War II Armory as a tank and tank destroyer crewman. Mike, welcome to Armory Wife Talk Radio.
Hey, thank you for having me, Annie. It's really great to be here.
We're excited to have you. I know many World War II armored vehicles can be seen in museums or as part of outdoor memorial displays, but that only goes so far. An entirely different impression and understanding comes when the engines roar to life and the vehicles kick up dust and dirt as they rumble past. But before we go too far, let's start at the beginning. How does an organization like World War II Armor come to be?
Well, it's a lot more fun to hear Rabbi Rob, the owner, tell it. And I'll probably get it sort of wrong. But the way he tells it, it all started with a Thompson 45 caliber machine gun. Because he had that, of course, he needed a Jeep. And then so the progression goes, because he had a Jeep, of course, he needed a blank firing 50 caliber machine gun to mount on it. And then after that, he needed an armored scout car and then his first tank and so on. So he really enjoyed getting together with his friends reenacting. But at a certain point, Rob had all of these armored fighting vehicles and he wasn't going to stop getting them, by the way. He needed more guys to crew them, and he had so much fun taking them to reenactments and events. He brought more of us in as crews, a lot of his friends and associates. It was during this time that he was beginning to see what a profound impression we were making on viewers. Museums are they're a great and effective way to convey information, and we complement that. Kind of what we do, it breathes life into what one might read about in a book. You know, it's an imposing sight to see a line of, say, less than human tanks maneuvering on a defensive position filled with, you know, other people, you know, Germans in this case. So the sounds of main guns and track pads and artillery, the smell of powder and exhaust, the smell, right? This is sensory.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And so you can, you know, the guns go off and you can feel it in your chest, right? Sometimes you can feel it in the ground as the tanks go by. So anyway, so people would linger for hours before and hours after our demonstrations, and they'd ask lots and lots of questions. So what we ended up doing were, you know, conveying ideas and information to people who otherwise wouldn't be thinking about it. So in 2017, Rabbi Rob set this up as a not-for-profit. We have a roster of just over 40 full-time staff. We've got motivated volunteers and a collection. The collection's about 37 tanks, tank destroyers, artillery pieces, light armored vehicles, and trucks. So, and it's not getting any smaller.
Oh my goodness. So has Rabbi Rob thought about writing a book about that? Like, if you give Rabbi Rob a gun, what comes next?
Yeah. Well, you know, like,
then
I, see, I, know,
the
I see where
and
you're
then,
going with that.
Yeah.
You know, that's actually a pretty good idea. You know, he wrote a small article about it for National Review Online, kind of describing where he's going with it. But in book form, I think it would make for a pretty good children's story.
I'm just saying, I see it in your guys' future. I love that. I love that you bring it to life. I know we talked about the sound, but I didn't even think about the smell of it or, you know, feeling it in the ground.
Yeah, it's gunpowder, it's oil, it's, you know, exhaust, all of that.
That's so awesome. So I've got thoughts on this next question, but so why do you do it? And why does Rabbi Rob do it?
Okay, so, well, being an active duty tanker, it can be a lot of fun, but, you know, it's the Army, so it's not always fun, right?
Right.
So when you're not in the Army and you're actually doing it for fun, it just changes the whole, you know, it changes the whole landscape.
Oh. So
I was a volunteer here. I did it for years. I was flying down from the DC area here to Florida almost once a month to do this. So like the military, I guess we all have our own reasons for joining, right? That'll be different from person to person. So, but for public events that we were doing, I loved seeing how excited people got after our battle demonstrations. You know, there's an endless line and flow of spectators, and they have a whole bunch of questions, lots of them. So most of them are just regular folks who don't know anything about tanks and that never gave it any thought. But then, you know, there's also a part of the audience are like hardcore armor geeks, just like us. And, you know, I get satisfaction from it when they can each walk away with a better understanding of what it was like for a World War II tanker. You know, you've made an impression. So, you know, also, you know, now and then you'll run across a World War II vet. And, you know, when that happens, everything stops and we'll all stand around and chat. This vet will describe what he did during the war and we'll soak it in, right? Spectators will too, you know, they'll all just like, their mouths are hanging open. I can't believe this is happening, right? It's kind of weird.
Right.
There's a lot of hero stuff going on. So we've had families contact us afterwards, telling us that their dad or granddad really never opened up to them about World War II the way he had after talking with us or seeing a demonstration. So that can have a profound effect on them, and it helps the families understand a little more about their veteran. So, and another thing, you know, it's kind of mind blowing, right? So more than a few people have sat inside some of these tanks. To sit inside a fully operational World War II tank, wondering what the guy before me thought of it and the guy before that, you know, and then you take it all the way back to World War II and try to get into the head of the original crew member who left home only a few years before to use this at the time brand new piece of equipment in a foreign land. It's mind blowing. It's totally, it's surreal. As to why Rabbi Rob does it, I guess got a little far afield there, but
no, I'm loving that. Right.
So now Rabbi Rob, you know, just keep it simple. You know, he describes himself as a very fortunate man who believes blessings are best when shared. Now he shares by enabling World War II armor to bring this unique aspect, all of his tanks and the entire collection, out to the public in honor of the veterans the collection represents. So, you know, and of course, well, he thinks it's fun too.
That has all the feels. I could not imagine being there and then having a World War II vet be there. It makes sense. Everything would stop and we would be hanging on their every word.
Well, sure. Yeah, we've built relationships with a couple of these guys. One of them, I actually met him. His name is Harry Miller. He was a tanker. He fought in the Battle of the Bulge, and I met him when I was crewing on the Tiger before I even got to World War II armor. He stuck his head up over the back deck. I was sitting there in a German uniform, and he's like, "You know, I captured one of these." And then he went on to tell us the story about how him and his crew captured the Tiger II tank that's sitting in the armor collection up at Fort Benning. And so we run into him at these events and we have him here. But, you know, ultimately, when he visited last time, he brought with him all of his binders filled with photos, filled with notes, filled with
books
and references that he'd taken meticulous notes on. And the degree of validation that we felt when he did that, he was like, nobody else is going to tell my story the way you can.
Right.
And he was like, so, you know, he's like, I'm not going to be around forever. You guys take it and you do with it what you need. So there's no better validation than that.
Okay. I'm just going to breathe and I'm not crying over here.
I'm not crying. You're crying.
Right. Oh my gosh. Serious validation for what you do and to be able to continue somebody else's story. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I said, all the feels. So I love everything that you guys do and all the information that you get out there. And but how do you keep it all running?
Well, it isn't easy. Here we have a full-time staff of 11 knuckle-dragging hairless apes. they're very talented and professional hairless apes, and they have a range of expertise. So we have this unofficial motto here, and we're fond of saying that tanks have two states. And this is true with the modern ones, by the way, or even people. Tanks have two states. They're breaking or broken.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so again, an unofficial motto. Usually it's treat them rough. But buying a tank is one thing. Keeping it running and keeping it fed is something else entirely. We have a couple of engineers that break down aircraft engines and more conventional type engines. Also, you know, obviously period correct. We've got mechanics. We have an ordnance guy that works with our black powder and our blank ammo. We have an armorer to shoot all of that. And of course, because we are a fairly large facility, we've got folks that manage that too. So we got warehouses full of tanks, three warehouses full of tanks, parts, uniforms. We've got a decent sized farm where the tanks get out and stretch their legs and graze on the back 40 now and then. So all of that serves as a support structure to keep the vehicles shooting and moving and communicating. Yeah, we have a combo guy too. Can't forget Gizmo. But wait, there's more.
Oh gosh.
We have a whole bunch of trained volunteers, right? So we all train for safety. We teach internal classes. They do research, generate original content for the web. We plan training events and devise period correct battle demonstrations. So we also have a regular group of German reenactors we train with, make sure our demonstrations are safe and believable, right? So we just couldn't do the mission without these guys. The gift of time that they offer is really, it would be mission failure if they didn't offer up their time.
That's a lot.
Sure is.
I mean, not that I thought like, you know, bringing out tanks would be, you know, an easy one person job, but.
No, I mean, it started out, there were just a few guys, but as the collection grew, the demand to keep it all together grew, right? So, you know, the roles refined, we professionalized it a little more. And so it's a kind of a stable organization. You know, when things are getting started, when they're first getting started, there's, you know, it's complete chaos. And you know, that's one of the things that I'm here to do, is to help bring order to the chaos and make sure that things go off the way they're supposed to, because it's so complex. It's a very complex.
Right. Thing. Right. I also love that they have a farm. They stretch their legs on.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Free range. It's all organic.
What does the average year look like? I was just thinking that, and I was like, don't say it. Okay. I'm so glad you said it. So tell me, what does the average year look like for World War II armor?
Okay. So the average year.
Is there an average year?
Well, you know, like I said, it's kind of, chaos, right? So it, no 2 years are the same, but, you know, ultimately we look at, you know, 10 months out of the year, we're doing one of two things, one weekend a month. It's either training for a public event of some kind, or, either training or doing a public event. So the sweet spot somewhere between, you know, 4 and 5 public events every year. And in between that, what we're doing is training for safety and procedures and stuff like that. And also we're rehearsing in order to make a more believable presentation at the next public event. So, you know, training is key, right? So it's the same everywhere. So as fun as tanks are, they are inherently dangerous, right? They don't care who they eat, and, you know, they don't. And so heaven forbid if we hurt somebody because we don't know what we're doing, we just simply couldn't continue the work. So,
right.
You know, it's kind of like a reserve unit. We're getting together once a month, you know, and we can be all we can be. So, you know, safety procedures are like, you know, shell handling, evacuating an unresponsive crewman, blank fire weapons handling. So that sort of thing. And we do it in repetition. So it's second nature. And we also train, you know, we train to rehearse the battle scenario. And that's about that. Mostly our events are here in Florida. Last May, we were fortunate enough to take part in the opening ceremony for the best tank crew competition at Fort Benning. It's the first time we ever worked with the Army. It was crazy phenomenal. We were floored to be there. You know, we went across the field, saw, you know, all of the muck-a-mucks and generals and all of the who's who in the armor community got to watch us do our stuff. And we reached an entirely new audience there. It was incredible.
That's got to be exciting, especially reaching new audiences and continuing to grow. I mean, like you said, you guys have grown already, but continuing to grow and find new places to take sure. the tanks, new events to do. That's awesome.
Anything we can do to reach a new demographic. I mean, usually we're looking at, I mentioned the hardcore armor geeks. Yeah, that's a given audience. But, you know, if our mission is to kind of show, you know, upcoming generations of what it was like, you know, just to even just get that little hook in them to get them to think about it a little bit, then that's a win, right? So anytime we can get a new audience, we always got our eyes out for that.
So your volunteers have to be very well trained. So what does World War II armor look for in its volunteers? What does it take and who are they?
Well, we're a bunch of nerds. We're a ragtag bunch of losers who don't have anything better to do than to jump on tanks. We're a wide range of guys. It's a lot of different backgrounds. Some of us were in the military, you know, pick a branch, some are not. We've got retired guys. We've got, you know, teachers, we've got medical professionals. My gunner is a foot doctor.
Oh my goodness.
We've got younger college students. They're just getting started. There's office types, some are in retail, and we have a couple of airline pilots.
Cool.
There's a joke. It's going to be dry, but I'm going to lay it on you anyway. Annie, how do you know if somebody is an airline pilot?
I don't know. How do you know?
They'll tell you.
I like it.
Rock on. So, you know, there's a secret ingredient in the success of an organization like this. That ultimately, it's no drama, right? No drama.
Ooh, and, I'm all for that.
In order to be one of Rob's merry men, the idea is that we're all equals. No one guy is better or an exception to the whole of the team. So as cool as this can, as this is, it can be very hard work and it requires a lot of commitment. So an ego or a sense of entitlement can stand in the way of safe operation and group cohesion, right?
Gotcha.
So in fact, another thing that we look for is that we each have to pass a background check with the ATF for explosives handling. So
that's good.
That's a good way of weeding some folks out, right? But seriously, there's a really tight bond between us. Our volunteers have a very low attrition rate. Nobody quits, right? Or very few.
Oh, man.
We can be totally irreverent, salt of the earth types hanging out around the campfire, but then we can flip a switch and we can turn into professional historians talking to a group of teenagers or a large crowd. So if a candidate's got some humility and they have a great attitude to couple with their love of World War II history, then they will do well with us.
I love it. That's great. And it's great. You know, you've got to do the background check, got no drama. I like those.
Best part is somebody else does that background.
So what's it? I was thinking that, like, you don't have to say no to them.
No. Nope.
Somebody else does.
Yep.
So what's the next big event for you guys?
Okay, well, very glad you asked. This coming August, the 18th through the 20th, brings what's basically the Super Bowl of U.S. reenacting, Annie.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, so the next event for us is the annual D-Day reenactment in Conneaut, Ohio. This event, it started in 1999. It's gotten bigger every year since. Initially, it was a few reenactors. They looked at the beach off the town park. This is on Lake Erie, by the way. And I'm paraphrasing, they said, "Hey, this looks a lot like Normandy. It's got a beach. It's got a bluff. Let's do a reenactment."
Oh, so, my goodness.
And so they did it every year. And every year they drew more spectators. And by 2007, volunteers putting on that event, they incorporated that event as D-Day Ohio Inc., right? And it picked up even more momentum. So basically people come from all over North America, and sometimes other places on the planet, to participate and to spectate. And the event really does a good job of setting the right conditions for World War II armor to do what it does.
That's awesome. Okay, so August 18th through the 20th, where is it again in Ohio?
Conneaut, Ohio.
It's just such a wonderful way to honor those who bravely fought with tanks in World War II. When we come back, we will talk more reenactments that bring these mighty vehicles to life. Listeners, if you would like to learn more about World War II armor, check out their website at www.armor.org or connect with them on social media via Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube at www.armor. And don't worry, if you miss any of this, the links will all be in our show notes. Stay tuned for the rest of our interview after our commercial break. We'll be right back.
This podcast episode was brought to you by our AWTR show sponsor, First Command Financial Services, whose mission is to help our nation's military families build a future worthy of their service. First Command provides ongoing financial coaching that evolves over the course of your military life and career. And with 170 locations worldwide, you'll find a First Command office near most major military installations. Visit www.firstcommand.com today and find a First Command financial coach near you.
Engage, educate, encourage, empower, advertise. AWN has many opportunities for promotion of your brand, service, or product, including web creatives, blog posts, social media promotions, podcast audio commercials, Facebook Lives, and so much more. Email empower@armywifenetwork.com to get started. We sincerely thank you for your support to empower military spouses, families, and their service members around the globe.
Welcome back, listeners. We're continuing our conversation with Mike Hauk, who is the full-time chief of staff for World War II armor. Mike, so why travel to Ohio all the way from Florida?
Okay, so before the break, I mentioned that D-Day Ohio has gotten pretty big. So it's the largest reenactment in the country. Annually, it pulls in roughly 1,500 reenactors. Those are U.S. Commonwealth, which is, you know, the Brits, Canadians, Australians, and of course, we have our Germans, right? So all of these people are volunteers. And what they do is they bring with them all of their knowledge, very deep bench of knowledge here. They bring all of their World War II equipment, vehicles, encampments, displays. And so this thing draws roughly 45,000 spectators each year. Wow. And it's a two-day event. This year it's going to be three. So that requires a great deal of coordination over time with people that care just as much about the history as we do. We've been planning and coordinating with them for months. You know, this is a kind of a year-round coordination, right? So those folks they're really dedicated, and it's an ambitious enterprise, and, you know, they care about it, and caring about it is key. So why travel? 40,000 people over a few days is a perfect opportunity to give an interested audience a taste of what it was like to land on that beach in 1944. You know, not everyone can make it out to Normandy. I was lucky enough to do it once myself. What this event does is it brings Normandy here and makes it accessible to folks who can't get there. It's the event's so well-rounded and immersive. A lot of the people that see it keep coming back, and a few are inspired to actually take part in it. World War II armor, we've done demonstrations for crowds of, just a couple of hundred people. We've done them for a few thousand, and we'll do that as long as we have an audience, and we'll do it for as long as we exist. But as long as we're connecting younger generations to that history, we're doing exactly what we set out to do. So, the U.S. The U.S. is down to only a few thousand World War II vets, right? They're ranging in their between their mid-90s and early 100s, right? Are these guys that are still with us. And I don't know what that exact number is now, but the presence is smaller every day. Their stories, they're astounding, they're surreal and incredibly human, right? So of course, the population of folks that can tell those stories is going quickly, and we admire them so much. That's us at World War II Armor, the staff at D-Day Ohio. So we admire them so much. We're happy to pick up that torch and carry it for any audience that is willing to listen.
I love it because obviously not everyone can make it to Normandy, and to be able to bring that to people and make it accessible, because it's just, I can't imagine. I've been to Normandy and I still can't imagine what it was like.
Right.
So to be able to bring that to life for people, oh, that's wonderful. And as a prior event planner, that's a big event.
We're only a slice of that. And whenever we talk to the main staff there, they're always pulling their hair out, but it's a labor of love for them. And it's great.
It's all for that adrenaline rush day of, is a rush. So what can I spectator expect to see at this reenactment?
Well, it is quite literally a rush, right? So, it's a 3-day event. When you go through the access gate at Conneaut Township Park, spectator would be overwhelmed at first, I think, by a mix of things. On its surface, it's got like this kind of carnival feel. It's sort of like a Renaissance festival, only 40s. You've got you've got people dressed in authentic period clothing, you know, and it's not just soldiers, sailors, airmen, mind you, you know, there's a lot of men, you know, men and women wearing just 40s civilian garb, you know, walking around. Some of these folks are selling food. Some of them are actually making the event happen. Some are just hanging out, right? But you'll see militaria, you know, period military and food vendors. I'll repeat, food vendors, right? Food is awesome out here.
Nice.
And yes, there is funnel cake, right? So I'm sorry. But throughout the day, there are breakout events. You know, there's live bands and singers. There's guest speakers, drill and ceremony demonstrations. Yes, that was very different back then. It'll throw any modern soldier for a loop. There are weapons demonstrations, and you know, basically the whole thing set around encampments of Allied and German reenactors, and those folks they spend the weekend living as the combatants did in the 40s, right? So, as for World War II armor, we set up a tank line down the bluff. It's out on the beach, and we conduct hourly salute fires of, you know, main guns and machine guns. Every now and then we'll teach a class, and we'll spend each day interacting with spectators. Beyond that, of course, there's the D-Day landings themselves, right? Each day, spectators get to look at a reenactment of the Allied landings on Normandy. We're talking Higgins boats, barbed wire, machine guns, explosions, air support, and tanks, right? Tanks.
Yeah.
So following the landing, the infantry guys take it up the bluff and a little further inland. And, you know, they kind of make it look like they're occupying Normandy. It's a super duper incredible spectacle. And anybody that's listening to my voice right now, they're missing out if they don't see it.
It sounds like you guys need to go. It definitely, I'm sold, you know, just to be able to see that brought to life. I can't even imagine.
Absolutely. It's great. You know, actually, I've gone, every year since I've been since I started volunteering, I've been going, mm-hmm. and I still haven't seen much of the event itself. We're always down on the tanks. We don't.
Oh, right. Yep.
Yep.
Oh man. So most people don't realize there were tanks in the initial landing at Normandy. What do you say when you hear that?
Well, we get to geek on this a lot. You know, this is where all of us knuckle draggers, you know, here, we're total nerds. We go, well, actually, you know, there were, right? So movies and TV shows, they've got their challenges, you know, when they're trying to provide a full representation of the landings, right? Many accounts, both written and on screen, are infantry centric, right? So people might have that impression. So for, you know, whatever reason, tanks are frequently overlooked. Mm-hmm. There were, in fact, tanks landing on the beaches with infantry on D-Day. Those would be the 741st and 743rd Tank Battalions. There'll be a quiz later on.
I'm taking notes.
So what's more, a couple of companies of swim-capable Sherman tanks, they were supposed to land 5 minutes before the infantry did, and they were supposed to get to work on the fortifications there. So unfortunately, those were let off their transports too far out mm-hmm. in the channel, and rough seas actually sank most of them. But a couple made it, however, and they were followed by a lot more. So basically, all told, you had about 58 tanks of various configurations landing in the initial assault on Omaha Beach.
I'm still back on the swim capable tank.
Yeah, it's called it's escaping me. The they called them Donald Duck tanks.
Really?
Because of the acronym, it escapes me right now, but it had this canvas skirt that it was surrounded by. And what that did was it displaced enough water so that it could float.
Oh.
And so that goes around the skirts of the outside of the tank, and you have the engine hooked up to a propeller in the back. Now, obviously not a very stable platform, and
right.
And yes, it displaced water, but the whole thing, if the skirt wasn't there, it would be under the water, basically, with nothing but the tank commander's head sticking out of the top. So,
oh my goodness.
So, you know, in this case, the seas were so rough, the sides weren't high enough. And if you take on enough water, obviously, you're going to sink. And so that's what happened. Don't ask me the destiny of all of those guys. I don't know how many made it and how many didn't.
That you are reading my mind, because that was my first thought. Like,
then I just what? It up. I apologize.
No, that is totally fine. So we've talked a lot about events. What do you guys do that isn't event oriented?
Okay, so not all of our efforts are spent on public events. We have a enormous archive of old field manuals, doctrine, references, and other original material. So a few of us, full-timers and volunteer, they spend a great deal of time researching and generating original content for our web presence. You know, for now, most of it's on Facebook, but we're starting to get that migrated because Facebook, that's the most engagement we get. So we're beginning to, but it's supposed to originate on our website, worldwar2armor.org, right? And so we have to move that off of Facebook and get it over to our website. And from there, then we can start putting it out on whatever platform we see fit. So another thing that we do is, we host as many World War II vets here on our farm as we can get, right? We'd love to show them the collection and hear what they have to say. If they're up to it, we'll do an interview on camera with them. And, if any of your listeners know of any World War II vets, we don't care which service they were in, have them contact us and we'll host them for a visit here. Not everyone gets to come here. They're definitely a shoe-in though.
I love that. That is a great opportunity for both of you guys.
No kidding. No kidding.
All right. So you talked about your website and you talked about Facebook. Where can our listeners go to find even more empowering information about your resources?
Well, so apart from our own web presence, this isn't, it's kind of not like set up like, say, an Army support service might be, something like that. So okay. I would implore anybody with even the vaguest interest to get to a library or a bookstore. Mm-hmm. Either way, you can keep up with our schedule on our web presence on Facebook, on the website. And even if you can't make it out to D-Day, Ohio, come out to one of our other public events. Again, a lot of them are here in Florida, but we're always looking for new stuff. Certainly, if you want to visit or find out more about D-Day, Ohio, and I can give this to you later, visit ddayohio.us. That's D-Day, Ohio, one word, .us. It's free, but you do need a ticket. And if you're within a day's drive, something like D-Day, Ohio makes for a perfect weekend excursion. So we would love to meet anybody listening to this right now.
This event is free?
It is free.
Okay, that mind blown there.
You'll want to bring a full wallet. There's a lot to spend money on.
Right. Oh my goodness. Okay. And for anyone listening, if you didn't catch any of those, don't worry. They will all be in our show notes. So just hop over to armywifenetwork.com to find those. All right. Our primary mission here at Army Wife Network is empowerment. And we always want to hear what empowerment means to our guests. So tell us, how would you complete this sentence? Empowerment is...
Well, without putting too much thought into it, I would have to say empowerment is knowing you're not alone. Many of you have heard this before, maybe you have, maybe your other guests have said something like that, but I can't think of many group or individual successes in either my personal or professional life that I accomplished all by myself in a vacuum. Either somebody facilitated it or supported it directly. You know, that might be my wife or a group of friends or colleagues. So ultimately, I don't think we should be too proud to do a gut check and recognize we can't always do it by ourselves, right? We're always part of a bigger landscape, and there's always somebody willing to help.
One more time for the military spouses listening, you can't always do it alone. I love that. And we need to hear that more often, because I think we, especially as military spouses, we try to. Yep. We absolutely try to. Oh my goodness. Mike, thank you so much for coming onto the show and giving our listeners a taste of what it is like to be a tank crew member during World War II. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
This is truly a wonderful way to pay tribute to such a brave group of men. Now let's hand it back over to our hosts in the metaphorical studio to hear what they thought of our conversation with Mike about World War II armor. Back to you, ladies.
Thanks to Mike Houck for sharing all about World War II armor and the resources it offers with us this week. Again, if you would like to connect with Mike or World War II Armor, you can check them out online via their website at www.armor.org or on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at WW2Armor.
Okay, Caitlin, so that was a really cool interview. I felt like Annie and Mike had a really good vibe going on, and they had a really cool conversation. And I just wanted to share with you and with our listeners that, you know, I've done a lot of these podcasts, and I've never actually known the person being interviewed or had any experience with it, but I was able to see World War II armor in action with our content curator, Chrissy, last December at an event in Florida. And I just have to say, you know, after my 10 years as a military spouse, and half of that time was spent in a cavalry unit, so I've seen a lot of tanks and a lot of demonstrations and displays, and the one that World War II armor put on blew the rest of them out of the water. It was, I mean, literally, pun intended. It was so cool what they did. And, you know, he really said, you know, the sights, the sounds, the smells, you can feel it in your chest. You can smell the gunpowder. It was really impressive what they put on. And he talked about how the spectators kind of show up hours beforehand and they stay hours later and they ask questions. And, you know, Chrissy and I were those people. We were there an hour before the show and we asked lots of questions, and you know, the people that we spoke to were very knowledgeable about their tanks and about what they did. And they answered all of our questions and they were very nice. And their whole organization was just, you know, really impressive. And, you know, they call themselves a bunch of nerds, but I don't think they realize that they're actually like the cool kids. Like all the kids were watching just think they were total rock stars. So what did you think about Annie's interview with Mike?
I thought it was amazing. And I agree with you in regards to the impact that they make with the research and knowledge that they give to their viewers. It's not just people showing up to watch them shoot off guns. They really take the time to ensure that the show they're putting on is not only realistic, but accurate with the time that they're portraying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an educational experience, not just a show, which is very unique.
Yeah, they were very knowledgeable about their tanks and what they had and what kind they were and what they were used for during the war. And it is really cool that Rabbi Rob owns all the tanks. I honestly didn't know you could just go out and buy a tank to own, which is kind of cool. I had told my husband, so now that's probably on his bucket list down the road. But one of the things they did do that everybody seemed to really like was they actually rolled over a car with one of the tanks and smashed it to pieces, which was a big hit with the crowd.
Oh, absolutely. That just, not even for the younger crowd, for everyone, it shows you the true strength and durability of those vehicles, even though we're looking at something that was designed and manufactured in the early 1900s.
Yeah.
It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, it was really cool. And then what they do, you know, with their D-Day landing reenactment, the spectacle, as Mike called it, you know, that's really cool. It gives, you know, people kind of an education, a firsthand experience of what it, you know, looked like and sounded like. And it kind of makes history come alive, which is a really cool, empowering event.
Absolutely. I also loved that they bring World War II veterans into their facilities and give them kind of that firsthand, like, look back at the earlier part of their life where they get to reminisce and just let go of all of those things that they've been holding on to that they may not have wanted to share with their family, but they feel safe sharing in that environment. And that also allows them to create a more accurate and realistic story for future shows as well, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's true. That's really cool. All right, listeners, we couldn't conduct our AWTR episodes without hearing from our Army Wife Network Empowerment Agent, Amanda Bicknies, followed by this week's News 6 report.
Hello, Army Wife Talk Radio listeners. I'm Annie Pierce, bringing you this week's Empowerment Patrol Report. Today we are showcasing one of our volunteers who is an MRE winner, which, by the way, that stands for Motivated and Ready to Empower. A huge congratulations to Army Wife Network Command Team member, our Recon Representative, Caitlin Hevelon. Caitlin was born and raised just outside of St. Louis, Missouri. She met a reservist husband while Caitlin was pursuing an undergraduate degree. After they married, her husband transitioned to active duty, and they spent 3 years at Fort Hood, Texas, then 2 years at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, prior to arriving at their current duty station, Goodfellow AFB, Texas. Caitlin has held a variety of volunteer positions and continues to be active within her local community. She enjoys spending time with their two rescue dogs and completing craft and DIY projects in her free time. So much thanks goes out to Caitlin for doing your part to empower military families all across the globe. Until next time, I'm Annie Pierce, reminding you that we are never completely alone on this military life journey.
No news is typically good news in this military life, except on Army Wife Talk Radio. Here is our AWN News 6 correspondent with this week's top stories.
Hi, Sarah and Caitlin. Here are this week's top stories. Each year, nearly 37,000 sailors separate from the Navy, which has recently been scrutinized for severe delays in issuing separation orders and DD-214 forms. The DD-214 forms provide proof of military service and determine eligibility for benefits. The separation orders are crucial for scheduling moves, breaking leases, and finding new employment. Military.com investigated a complaint from Christopher Atkins, whose separation orders took 123 days and were issued within days of Military.com asking for details. The Navy says part of the issue is that sailors are not submitting their paperwork within the 60-day limit, but instead are submitting in a shorter window. Atkins did say that he submitted his paperwork at 41 days. But another sailor interviewed submitted her paperwork early, and it still took 121 days to receive orders. Atkins is still waiting on his DD-214. You can read more at military.com. The Air Force has launched an entertaining program to show its airmen and women and their families how to eat healthier and like it, announced Federal News Network. The program is called Nutrition Kitchen, where a chef from the Joint Culinary Center of Excellence at Fort Lee, Virginia, gives three levels of a version of a recipe and suggests modifications and ingredient swaps to help level up the nutrition. Following the chef, registered dietitians at Travis Air Force Base discuss the science and nutrition behind the chef's choices. There are currently 5 episodes, and they're all posted at YouTube for free. You know I'll link to that over at Army Wife Network. The videos are quick, they're a little silly and fun, and they have recipes that are easy to modify for your own kitchen. You should definitely check it out. In fact, I watched the first episode and I am on board for level 3 of the first one. It was sweet potato toast with peanut butter spread and fresh fruit. Totally doable. You should definitely check it out. The Military Times Foundation announced the Service Members of the Year Awards for 2022. For the past 21 years, Service Members of the Year Awards have honored one outstanding military member, active duty, guard, or reserve from each branch of service. They are selected based on exemplary military service that goes beyond the call of duty. So here they are. Congratulations to these winners. Army Soldier of the Year, Major Nicholas Dockery. Marine of the Year, Major Corey Jones. Airman of the Year, Staff Sergeant Duncan Copley. Sailor of the Year, Naval Air Crewman Helicopter Kilfoy. Coast Guardsman of the Year, Aviation Survival Technician Joshua Carlson. And Veteran of the Year, David Kim, who founded the charity Children of Fallen Patriots. Learn more about these outstanding service members at servicemembersoftheyear.org. And this week in history, on July 25th, 1943, the first Navy ship named for an African American, the USS Harmon, was launched. USS Harmon was named in honor of Mess Attendant First Class Leonard Roy Harmon, who posthumously received the Navy Cross for heroic actions trying to save a shipmate on board the USS San Francisco during the naval battle of Guadalcanal on November 13, 1942. According to Wikipedia, on that fateful day, the USS San Francisco was raked by Japanese gunfire during the battle, killing nearly every officer on the bridge. Harmon rushed in to evacuate the wounded. He was then assigned to assist pharmacist mate Linford Bonsteel in evacuating and caring for the wounded. While the ship was being raked by enemy gunfire, Harmon helped evacuate the wounded to a dressing station. While doing so, he deliberately stood between Bonsteel and enemy gunfire in order to protect his wounded shipmate. This action resulted in his death. You can read more at Wikipedia, and you can find the link to all of our New Six reports at armywifenetwork.com. This is your Army Wife Network New Six correspondent, Jolene McNutt, signing out.
In normal military fashion, no news is good news, except when it comes to our Army Wife Network News 6 correspondent. Thank you, Jolene, for always keeping us up to date in this military life journey. Also, a big thank you to our show sponsor, First Command Financial Services. Now let's take a quick 60-second commercial break. We'll be back with more in just a few moments.
Need more information to engage, educate, encourage, and empower you in your military life journey? At armywifenetwork.com, you can find nearly 2,500 blog posts about deployment, PCS, army life, health, finances, parenting, and so much more. You can also check out our most popular resource, Post with the Most. Courtney from Oklahoma says, Army Wife Network gave me confidence and resources to successfully handle deployment. Their podcasts and blog posts were just what I needed to realize I wasn't alone. Tap into all of our empowering resources at armywifenetwork.com.
As we get ready to wrap up, we invite you to join us every Thursday at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for our weekly Facebook Live MilSpouse Empowerment Moments. If you need to catch it later, the audio will be converted into one of our podcast episodes. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss our next full-length episode when we chat with Julia Taylor, founder of Geek Pack, an organization created to empower women of all ages to change their lives through the power of coding. It's going to be another amazing show.
Thank you again to today's show sponsor, First Command Financial Services. With 4 out of 5 financial coaches coming from the ranks of military spouses or veterans, they're uniquely qualified to help you pursue financial security. Visit firstcommand.com to learn more and find a financial coach near you. Our sponsors help us do what we love, empower military spouses. If you or someone you know has a product or service to share with our listeners and would like to join our mission to empower military families, let's chat. Please email empower@armywifenetwork.com.
Finally, if you want to connect with us here at Army Wife Network beyond this podcast, you can subscribe to our newsletter. The SITREP. In our SITREP newsletter, we showcase our top blog posts, upcoming AWTR information, exclusive printables, giveaways, sponsor information, and more. The SITREP will arrive in your inbox twice per month. To sign up, visit armywifenetwork.com and enter your email in the right sidebar under the SITREP, or catch the pop-up box on our homepage.
Listeners, no matter where you are in your male spouse journey, new or seasoned, active, guard, retired, or prior service, we are here for you. We thank you for your continued support and interaction. Engage, educate, encourage. Army Wife Talk Radio is your source for military life empowerment. This is your Army Wife Network Command Team signing out.
Thank you for tuning in to Army Wife Talk Radio. The views and opinions expressed in our show are personal. AWTR is in no way affiliated with the Department of Defense or any other branch of the armed services. Inclusion in our show does not reflect endorsement by the DOD, any local government, or their agencies. Until the next episode, head over to armywifenetwork.com to connect with all of our engaging resources. Engage, educate, encourage. AWN is your source for military life empowerment.